All right, welcome to Indie Media On Air. Today's show is about independent music, music activism, and an artist in a time of Clear Channel. I am joined in studio with Lewis. Lewis, formerly of the band The Fuse, and he's our guest DJ. What's up, Lewis?
Hello.
How you doing?
Good, I'm doing good. How are you?
Who was that? Who was that?
That was an old 60s band called The Flirtations.
Right on. Okay. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. Go, please.
Okay, so before we get into the show, we're going to read some indie media headlines and some local news, and then we're going to be back in studio and joined by Holmes from downhillbattle.org. And Holmes will have a lot to say about music activism, independent music, and file sharing, peer-to-peer networks, and reasons to get rid of the major labels. And for indie media headlines, we're going to start with local IMC news. Please join the LA Independent Media Center for a screening of the documentary film Outfoxed, an examination of how media empires led by Rupert Murdoch's Fox News have been running a, quote, race to the bottom in television news. This film provides an in-depth look at Fox News and the dangers of ever-enlarging corporations taking control of the public's right to know. The screening will be followed by a discussion on the importance of the IMC and independent media to a true democracy. The screening will take place at Rocco Titlin Cafe, 1277 Wilton Place, corner of Wilton and Fountain, in Hollywood, on Thursday, February 3rd, 7:30 p.m. The next IMC meeting will be held at the same location on the 5th of February, and you can write to info@la.indymedia.org for more information. That's info@la.indymedia.org for more information. The World Social Forum is now in progress. According to the World Social Forum website, the World Social Forum is an open meeting place where groups and movements of civil society are opposed to neoliberalism and a world dominated by capital or by any form of imperialism are engaged in building a planetary society centered on the human person, where people come together to pursue their thinking, to debate ideas democratically, to formulate proposals and share their experiences freely, and network for effective action. The WSF proposes to debate alternative means to building a form of globalization based in solidarity, which respects the universal human rights and those of all men and women of all nations and the environment, and is grounded in democratic international systems and institutions at the service of social justice, equality, and the sovereignty of peoples. For more on this week's social forum, please visit and stay tuned to indymedia.org. This story from indymedia.org via Burma, Indie Media. More than 3,000 migrant workers from Burma have been killed in the south of Thailand following the tsunami. They have been denied access to government aid and have been unable to claim and bury their dead. The Thai government has also used the tsunami as an excuse to crack down and deport people back to Burma. In the Arakan state, which is the west of Burma, 96 people were killed and 788 displaced in 17 villages. But there has been no government assistance to those affected. In Thailand's southern provinces, there are at least 120,000 migrant workers from Burma registered with the government. Numbers of unregistered workers could be three times that amount. Migrant workers therefore suffered heavy casualties in the tsunami. Following the tsunami, an article was published in the Thai press claiming that migrants from Burma were robbing and stealing. The article was then used as an excuse for a government crackdown. According to Asian Human Rights Commission, over 2,000 Burmese migrant workers have been sent back to Koh Samui province in Burma. Among them, those who lost their legal documents or whose employers were killed were also sent back to Burma as they could not prove their legal status. Thai immigrant officials abandoned these people near Koh Samui province in Burma. According to the latest information, Burmese authorities only allow a small number of people to come inside the country. For more information on this story, please visit indymedia.org. And this story from indymedia.us via santacruz.indymedia.org. George Cadman of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.FM, the LPFM station which was recently raided by the FCC, interviews Elsie Cohen of the Fellowship of Reconciliation about her work in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. George's show is called Peace Talks and is on Sundays from 3 to 6 p.m. You can find that at freakradio.org. Elsie Cohen is a Sephardic Jew born in Atlanta, Georgia. She is co-vice chair of the National Council of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. She lives in Israel, or she has lived in Israel and worked with Palestinians and Israelis. She also has led three delegations to the Middle East, to Israel, Palestine, and Iraq. For more on this story and to listen to the interview, please visit santacruz.indymedia.org. Finally, I want to add that a San Diego IMC reporter was arrested last week during the inauguration protest in San Diego and falsely charged with hitting a police officer. For more information on how you can help and how to get the full story, please visit sandiego.indymedia.org. Okay, next up, we're going to be speaking with Holmes Wilson from downhillbattle.org and talking with Lewis, our in-studio guest and DJ, about independent music, music activism, and artists in a time of Clear Channel. But first, a song from the Deadly Snakes, I Can't Sleep at Night. All right, we're back. This is Indie Media On Air, and this is a show dedicated to independent music, music activism, and artists in a time of Clear Channel. Joining us today is Holmes from downhillbattle.org, a music activism website. And Downhill Battle, according to its site, describes its mission. Five major record labels have a monopoly that's bad for musicians and music culture, but now we have an opportunity to change that. We can use tools like file sharing to strengthen independent labels and end the major label monopoly. Our plan is to explain how the majors really work, develop software to make file sharing stronger, rally public support for a legal peer-to-peer compensation system, and connect independent music scenes with the free culture movement. Holmes, welcome to Indie Media On Air.
Hi.
How you doing?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
Good, good. Why don't you give us a quick background again on Downhill Battle and what you're up to right now.
Okay, well, that you read our mission statement pretty well. Downhill Battle started in August 2003. We started Downhill Battle because we've had a sort of background in independent music and activism, and particularly fair trade activism, and or you could say in some situations anti-corporate activism. And we just watching what was happening in the music business, where the major record labels, four corporations that had run the record industry really badly for decades, were sort of on extremely weak footing, in part because of a range of issues, but in large part because of file sharing technology. We saw that as a huge opportunity for people who cared about independent music and for people who didn't want such a huge chunk of our culture as the music business is, controlled by just a handful of corporations, to really take music culture back and put it in the hands of independent artists and people who are, you know, doing music the sort of real grassroots way, or just put it back in the hands of the people, you know, in a really important sense where, you know, for decades, even the music that's, you know, on mainstream radio, it's just there because it's been picked to be there by a few companies who then pay for it to be on radio stations. And at the very least, we want a music culture that's based on what people really like and that's based on what's really popular. And so we saw, you know, we see right now as a great opportunity to do that just simply because the major record labels are on such weak footing and because now people have the tools to distribute music themselves and promote music themselves.
Well, there's a lot to talk about here, and I want to get into some details. One of the things that you have a flyer on your site that says it's a fallacy, it's a huge fallacy. The fact that the music industry has led us to believe that paying for major label CDs can help our artists is one huge fallacy. You'd be better off tracking down your favorite artist's home address, mailing them a check for a dollar, because that's about all they're going to see from each sale of their CD, if anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the huge sort of ironies here, and that's why, you know, that's part of the impulse that we felt when we got started, was these record companies were saying, oh, you know, we have to sue these families for downloading music. You know, they've been sort of suing, singling out individuals and taking them to court, where the individuals really don't stand a chance for sharing music online. You know, they said, well, we have to do that because we have to protect the artists. And, you know, if we don't stand up for these artists, how are they going to make a living? When in reality, the major record labels and the system they created was absolutely terrible for artists. And when you pay $16 on a CD, yeah, the musician, I mean, in most major label contracts, musicians don't even make their first artist royalty, which is something around 80 cents to a dollar, until they've sold 300,000, 500,000, or even 1 million copies of their CD. So needless to say, most major label artists never even get that far. So most never make that first dollar in artist royalties. And so here we had the major record companies, you know, going after literally high school kids with these million-dollar lawsuits because, you know, to saying that they were standing up for artists, and it was the ultimate hypocrisy. You know, and really what we're trying to do is raise some sort of, use this opportunity that file sharing presented us to raise some economic consciousness about where does your money go when you spend money, when you spend it on music. You know, does it go to the people who made that music? Does it go to a cool label that has really good taste, that puts out stuff you like and that really gives back to the scene? Or does it just, you know, go into this corporate monopoly that basically wastes it or spends it on bribing radio stations or, you know, all these other practices that, you know, most people don't really support? And so we really want to, part of what we've been really working at is saying, well, now, you know, we know people can get, you know, people can get music for free because they can download it online. So if you're spending money on music, it better be going to the thing that, the stuff you care about. And we've found that's been a really effective message. You know, it's sort of like, next to a lot of other sort of boycott movement messages where you're sort of saying, you know, trying to get people to use their money in a more socially conscious way. It's a lot easier here because now it's so easy to say, look, if you spend your money in this way, the money's not going to make it to people you care about.
You have a number of reasons on your on downhillbattle.org about why we should get rid of the majors. And I want to have a roundtable discussion here. Lewis, I want you to join in and jump in on these 6 points. And I just want to briefly go through them. Music diversity will grow. Pay for play or payola, radio will end. Independent music won't be marginalized. 4, the lawsuits will stop. 5, artistic freedom will expand. And the last is musicians will make a better living. Lewis, you were in a band called Fuse. Did you have any experience with this stuff?
I think, one of the points also that I wanted to make was also that major labels are now setting up fake indies. And I don't know if you talk about that in your website, but they set up fake indies to promote artists in the hopes to gain them an independent following and then take them, and then the major label would snatch them up. And there's various examples of that throughout the music industry.
Yeah, that's been something that's been happening for a really long time. And you know, it's kind of, it's sort of sad because it's like, what we feel like has happened there is it's almost given popular music, as in, you know, music that a lot of people like, you know, and that everybody can, you know, dance to at a party and stuff. It's almost given popular music a bad name, because, you know, anything that you've got the majors sort of hovering like a vulture over all these amazing independent music scenes, ready to just scoop up whatever thing looks like it, you know, has enough appeal to make them some money, right? And what happens there is that, you know, the final product, when a major label signs a band, a lot of the time their sound changes. You know, they can't choose their own producer. They have to conform to a slightly different set of rules. It doesn't really reflect their artistic intentions. And so so it really means that, you know, when music gets popular, in order to get popular, it's got to make all these compromises. So when people think of popular music, they think of the compromises. And when bands go from being, you know, a band in your town to being like a band that tons of people across the country are listening to, a lot of the time there's a lot of bad feeling there. You know, everyone says like they're selling out and stuff like that. Well, right now we feel like there's an opportunity to make it so that nobody has to sell out to reach tons of people, because, you know, people can just reach a huge audience online without making any of those compromises.
Okay, let's talk about, I mean, the major label is a marketing system. It's a massive marketing system, and that's what really allows for the sort of distribution to happen on such a large scale. And the payola certainly is a part of that. In fact, it's probably the backbone of the system. Maybe talk about that for a second.
Well, there's a lot of changes happening in payola right now, actually. So things are really in flux, and this is just over the past couple months, thanks to the New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer. He's basically like, you know, he's basically the anti-corporate cop, essentially, for the entire country. I mean, he's pretty much, you know, just done so much work on the tobacco industry and, you know, and all these sort of financial scandals. And he actually took on, he started investigating payola, too. But just to sort of back it up, this is the way the system basically works is the major record labels are able to pay radio stations to play certain songs, certain new stuff that's coming out. And they can't do it directly, or in most cases, they don't do it directly because that would be illegal. But they funnel the money through a so-called indie or independent promoter, which isn't like indie, like good indie. It's just like a what they call it. What it means is the money going through a third party makes it legal, but it's essentially just record labels giving money to radio stations for airplay. And so, in effect, what that means is if you're an independent label, it's extremely difficult to get your music on the air, because, you know, you just don't have that kind of cash. And it means the major labels are able to keep out, you know, any almost like any other label from competing in terms of reaching a mass audience. But yeah, like I said, there's some stuff changing with that now. And it'll really be interesting to see how that goes.
Right. The lawsuits, in your site, you say you've spoken with dozens of people who've been targeted, and these lawsuits are literally driving families into bankruptcy. The risk and expense of fighting the suits rather than settling means that over 400 people targeted by the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, may not be a single case that gets decided in court. And the only way to stop these suits is to stop buying the CDs that fund the lawsuits. And yeah, you've actually talked to some of these people. What are they saying?
Well, this is something we tackled right when we started. So this is about a year and a half ago now. And you know, it was just a, like, I think a lot of, you know, I don't know how many of your listeners followed the story in the paper. I mean, for perspective, next to, you know, the range of humanitarian and political tragedies happening in the world, this really isn't anything. But it's an interesting kind of, it's an interesting kind of instance of what happens when you have a technology that empowers very large numbers of people to kind of act in unison to do something better than a large corporation. So, you know, peer-to-peer software lets, you know, thousands of people come together and make a gigantic system of music distribution, a huge music library, in effect. And since it's this headless organization that's totally non-hierarchical, you know, the only response to the corporation is to go after individuals and make an example of them. But the way that works is, you know, they're coming down so hard on certain individuals, there's really no contest between a corporation with deep pockets suing, you know, a family that stands to lose their house. And what they do is they sue people for $1.5 million, and then peg the settlement amount at about $3,000 or $5,000, which is pretty much exactly what it costs for your first couple days with a lawyer. So they basically say, like, for the price of a lawyer, you can settle. They're sort of saying, we don't want any of these cases to go to court. We just want to create this de facto fine, you know, completely, like, basically just make up their own, you know, law, essentially. And the and so, yeah, the results of that in some of the cases, people we talked to, like, you know, I think a lot of people may have the impression that a lot of the people getting sued were really sort of, you know, upper middle class or had a lot of money, and there's the kid who knows tons about computers with an expensive computer, and it just wasn't that way at all. It's just a ton of people who, you know, got internet so their kids would do better in school, they thought, or something, and you know, didn't have a lot of money and had kids and had a, you know, had a home and had bills, and it's like, you know, people were, I talked to someone who was, like, literally getting evicted from their house 2 days after, 2 days, or 2 days after their deadline for replying to this, you know, crazy lawsuit that just came out of the blue.
Right.
So, I mean, it was, that was pretty crazy. And I think, you know, and those have continued and they're still doing them, you know, 600 or so. And now the movie industry has started doing them as well. And what's sort of scary about it is that it's totally receded into not being a real news story anymore. And it's just kind of, you know, every few months, 500 or so people get pounded on for this, you know, absolutely stupid and avoidable.
It's setting a climate of fear. I mean, this is what this is all about.
Yeah, it's about scaring people away from these new systems of distribution, fundamentally.
But it's also not only major labels that are doing that. I know a lot of independent labels don't like it when their bands put up their record. A lot of independent bands or independent labels, the way they operate, they'll give a band like $2,500 to go record an album. And a lot of times it's beneficial for the artist, especially if it's a local artist in whatever city, to put it up on the internet or file share it. And a lot of labels, smaller labels, are now cracking down on their own artists, you know. And in my own experience, we could only put excerpts of songs. We could only put like 30-second excerpts of songs. We couldn't put down the whole song for people to file share or for people to download, because it was hurting the sales at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think there's still a lot of, I mean, there's definitely not really a consensus in the independent music community about whether it's good for the albums just to be out there floating around or whether it's not so good in terms of making money. And, you know, I'd argue that in a lot of cases it's pretty good, and that for independent music, when people care about the label and about the band, and they, you know, have a real sort of intimate connection with the band, that a lot of people will spend money on stuff they've already downloaded. But, you know, that's one opinion. There's not total consensus on that. But what, in terms of the lawsuits, though, you know, the only people who have been doing these lawsuits against like families in this way of, like, you know, getting a bunch of really high priced lawyers to just go after some family for like $1.5 million. Like, that's only been, you know, these
huge
labels,
major labels that could afford it.
Yeah. And you know, I think, you know, and there have been surveys of musicians broadly, you know, major label and independent musicians, you know, that said, you know, the numbers are sort of like, do you think peer-to-peer helps you or hurts you? And it's about 50-50. But, and then if you ask, do you think people, you know, kids should be getting sued or going to jail even, because that's something people in Congress are proposing for sharing music. I mean, most musicians to that question say no way, you know, and that number is something like 70%.
Well, I want to jump into the subject of how we can artists can reimburse themselves, pay themselves in a different model. And before we jump into that, let's play another song, and we'll come back and talk about how artists can make a living off their music in an independent media environment. Who do we got going here?
This is a band called Spoon, and the song is called Small Stakes.
Small stakes give you blues. If you don't feel taken, don't think you've been used. 'Cause it's all right Friday night to Sunday. Small stakes.
The next song is from Hepcat, a local LA band that actually the record came out. This next song came out on Moon Records in New York about 1993 and then got bought out by Epitaph.
Before we go to that song, we're going to. Who was that last song? It was the Spoons?
It's called Spoon. Oh. The band's called Spoon. Small Stakes is the name of the song.
Okay, before we go to the next song, I want to remind listeners that our show today is about independent music, music activism, and artists in a time of Clear Channel. And we're going to go to a quick break in a minute with, and we'll be back, and we're going to talk more about Clear Channel, and we still have Holmes on the phone from downhillbattle.org. This is KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and on the web at kpfk.org. Back with Indie Media On Air, and we're joined by Holmes from downhillbattle.org and Lewis, our guest DJ in studio. So the issue of music activism, and we touched on it a minute ago, yeah, it isn't as heavy as the Iraq war, but it's a symbol of what's happening in American culture. It's a symbol of major powerful corporations dominating independent music, and in a climate of Clear Channel, which I want to talk about in a minute. But before we get to that, Holmes, I want you to address the difference between cultures, and you define them on your side as this clearance culture versus permission culture versus free culture. And why don't you talk a little bit about that? What is that? Holmes, are you with us?
Sorry, I switched phones.
Okay. I was asking about clearance culture, permission culture.
This is another thing we talk about, and it comes up probably more than in rock. It comes up more in hip hop, because hip hop is traditionally always used a lot of samples, and it's always used sampling clips of other songs or beats to build on the tradition of R&B and soul, and build on itself to make new things. And so one of the things that's happened with hip hop, though, is that as hip hop became commercialized, the major record labels that sort of ended up owning a lot of the copyrights, because, you know, when you sign to one of these labels, invariably they keep the copyright. You know, the artist doesn't have it. The labels that own the copyrights at some point realized that they could make some money off of charging other artists to sample them. And at first samples were, you know, it didn't cost that much when a hip hop artist wanted to sample an old soul record, because it's a relatively new thing. But pretty soon they jacked up the prices to the point where, you know, to sample a really recognizable piece of music, you could end up paying more in royalties for the sample than you were even collecting selling your album. So what that did was it really drove a lot of sampling out of hip hop. And now hip hop totally survived, and, you know, there's still a ton of underground stuff that, you know, there's a mixtape scene, and there's still a ton of samples being used in underground stuff, and to a lesser extent now in some mainstream stuff is coming back. But you know, for a while, or in a large part, you know, people like the Neptunes and Timbaland and hip hop have, you know, been kind of working around the de facto ban or the economic disincentive to do sampling. And it's really had an effect on how, you know, that culture grew. That's an example of the, you know, the kind of conditions that are being created now that you know, pieces of culture can be copyrighted, and those copyrights most of the time are in the hands of one of a few very large corporations. So, you know, another example of this is in the documentary about the Iraq War called Uncovered. The documentary maker wanted to use clips of George W. Bush, pretty much, you know, making a fool out of himself, taken from, I believe it was CBS, although it could have been another one of the major networks. And the major network said, you know, no, you can't use that clip because it would make the president look bad. And, you know, that has really severe implications for free speech, where a corporation is saying to an independent filmmaker, you can't use this video clip in your film because of its political content. You know, it has real free speech implications. But, you know, really what it came down to is a copyright issue. And so in a lot of ways, the fact that more and more of our culture is controlled by a few corporations means that copyright is going to become a bigger and bigger issue for people making music, for people doing documentaries or political satire, or for people, you know, basically doing any kind of commentary on culture that involves sort of pointing to TV clips or pointing to audio, you know, as reference points in their work. It's becoming very, very difficult to do. And so there's a growing movement now to try to work against that, to try to roll that back and try to create free culture, where more and more cultural work is not under that strict control of copyright, and where more of it's open for new creators and people with new ideas to use.
Now, you have a lot of tools that you're working on, software tools, and people can go to downhillbattle.org to learn more about them. But briefly, just without getting too much detail, just talk about what it is: BlogTorrent, IM integrated file sharing, BitTorrent, RSS, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, I think one of the sort of strange things that's happened is that we're sort of activists entering this very kind of technology oriented space, right? And basically, we just have our what we want to do is we want to reduce the role of these corporations play in music and in shaping our culture generally. You know, we have the sort of tools we bring from the activism space of trying to organize people and getting people to do flyering. We have things where people on our website, you can sign up to flyer shows, or you can get stickers and flyers to print out, or we do an in-store labeling campaign. It's like putting stickers on major label CDs basically to tell people not to buy them. A lot of more sort of traditional things, you know, activist things like that. But, you know, another thing in this space is that we have to recognize is that the invention of Napster, years back, the invention of Napster did more to revolutionize the way music is being distributed, and fundamentally the way, you know, media in general is being distributed, than any, you know, organizing campaign or stickering effort or flyering or anything like that. And so just as activists, we have to get, you know, really comfortable with that and say, well, look, you know, maybe the best shot we have at changing the way this media landscape works and giving more power to the grassroots is maybe the best shot we have is by making new tools. And so, yeah, this, you mentioned some of the tools. The one that we're focused on right now is BlogTorrent, which is peer-to-peer, which is an adaptation of this peer-to-peer software, BitTorrent, that's really, really useful and popular for distributing video online. And basically what BlogTorrent does in effect is it makes it so if you have a computer with broadband, you can distribute really high-quality video on a feed that's sort of like a channel to literally as many people who want it from your home computer. So it literally gives any kid with broadband their own TV channel.
Holmes, I want to give out the phone number real quick because we're going to have callers call in. The phone number to call in is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. And we're going to go to phones in about 7 or so minutes, and we'll have a music break in there. Before we get into too many of the details of the technology, there's two really important things I want to touch on. One is how do musicians make a living? How are they going to make a living in an environment? And quickly, what are outline some of the concepts about what is it called? It's collective licensing.
Okay, so the first answer to the question of how do independent musicians make a living is the same way that most independent musicians have always made a living, which is by playing shows and selling CDs and selling other stuff. And I think, you know, that those things shows, you know, the internet gives people many ways to bring more people to the shows. I mean, it's just such a great organizing tool, and whether you're a political organization or a band, it's pretty much the same thing. You know, getting your word out and building community and getting, you know, a big mailing list is always like going to help. In terms of selling CDs, I mean, I still buy independent CDs, and tons of people I know still buy independent CDs, even though they can all download them. So I think that's something that's still going to stay strong. But in terms of, you know, really new and interesting ways that we can use this technology to make to directly make musicians money when people download their stuff, there's ways to do that too, and that's called collective licensing. And there's a couple proposals from a range of legal experts and economists, and people have sort of been looking at this from a really kind of, you know, neutral viewpoint and saying, well, kind of egghead, you know, saying like, well, if the major labels were really, you know, interested in supporting artists, why won't they do this? You know, it's kind of, there's reasons why the major labels haven't yet. But anyway, the proposals go along the lines of let everyone download whatever music they want as long as they pay something like $5 a month on top of their broadband bill. You know, so people are paying $30 or $40 for broadband, so pay another $5 for all the music you want. Most people would do that, right? Even, you know, even kids would do that. And that money from all the people paying in creates a pool large enough that, you know, it's really a huge chunk of money relative to the size of the music industry right now. And then that money can be distributed according to what downloads are the most popular. And there's a couple different ways it could be worked out, but the technology is already there. It's really easy to track popularity of songs around. And the infrastructure is already there. You know, they already do the same royalty distribution thing for radio. They already do it for web radio.
Do you have details of this on your site?
Yeah, all this stuff? We do.
Okay.
There's articles about it. If you go to our front page, there's if you click on just right at the top, there's links to stuff about voluntary collective.
Okay, great. Before we get into calls, I want to just switch real quickly and talk about Clear Channel, because Clear Channel is the blood-sucking vampire of Radioland, and it owns more than 1,250 radio stations nationwide. For those who don't know, they have been involved in organizing pro-war demonstrations with the use of its radio stations and hosts. Not to mention, its owner is an avid supporter of the Bush administration. Clear Channel CEO Lowry Mays is a staunch Republican and Bush supporter. Mays and Clear Channel are major contributors. When the elder George W. gave Texas A&M his presidential library, Mays, one of the school's regents, became a major donor. They also shared the stage when they were both introduced into the Texas Business Hall of Fame. And I should add, Mark Mays, his son of Lowry, recently took over his father's position. Also, Clear Channel has created artist and song ban lists for distribution throughout its stations and has directly participated in helping the FCC to shut down independent community-based LPFM radio stations. And it's a perfect opportunity for me to bring up a local radio station in Los Angeles that uses the name Independent, the Independent Radio Station. I don't even want to say its name on the air because it's giving credibility to its name, but everybody knows who they are. It's really, really frustrating to have Clear Channel getting involved in siphoning off and, you know, this sort of whole music culture and exploiting that word. And I think it's really important for people to get educated on what Clear Channel is about. Lewis, you want to say something about that?
Now, I was going to say that also outside of owning like a billion stations, Clear Channel owns a lot of venues all throughout the country and make it virtually impossible for a lot of the independent touring artists to get through to, you know, if they want to play Spokane or if they want to play a little town in Ohio, then the only major venue there are Clear Channel venues. And to a large extent, they do dictate the popular culture of that small town.
The venue thing is, I would say that's almost the most scary, at least in the music realm, obviously. I mean, and I went to one of their demonstrations that they staged in my town, actually, in Worcester, Massachusetts, to do a small counter demonstration, pass out flyers and stuff. And that's really scary, too. But yeah, in the music area, the venue stuff is the most scary because they're getting really, you know, they're really sort of sinking their tentacles into local music scenes and just buying places out.
And not only do they pick and choose what artists could come through that town, but they also charge exuberant fees for the whatever artists do play there on merchandise sales and CD sales inside their venues, which is really, you know, at the end of the day, cuts into.
I want to know why a former Sex Pistols is promoting that station too.
I mean, you know, they were on a major label also, so I don't think he really cares.
You know, and not only that, you know, you got to ask the guy, do you support the Bush administration's war in Iraq? And
I think
you know,
I saw him.
If not, why are you working for Clear Channel?
I think I saw him coming out of a Republican registration fundraiser.
You're kidding.
I swear it was him, that old man.
Oh, man. Well, I think we have sort of two takes on the Clear Channel thing. And the first is at the grassroots level, fight it. Because, you know, and you know, any way you can, I think, you know, in terms of deciding not to go to shows at Clear Channel venues, sometimes that's not an option because there's just something you really want to see. And, like, if that becomes a condition for participation in music, I wouldn't want anyone to totally pull the plug on their musical life. But, you know, start DIY venues, try to move more action there, you know, whether it's a church, whether it's like a gym or, you know, shows at colleges or whatever it is, you know, explore like any avenues to set up alternatives to that where you live. And then on the radio front too, this LPFM stuff is moving along and, you know, you should check in with Chris about how to make that happen better and faster in your area. But I think like from a, like taking a big step back and looking at the position Clear Channel's in, they've bought up a ton of radio stations, but they kind of might have bought their way onto a sinking ship. And so in a lot of ways, we're sort of, from one perspective, we want people to fight it. But from another perspective, we're sort of optimistic about the future because the more people get like an MP3 player, the more people get internet at their house, the more people get, you know, all these, you know, one of the two satellite radio things is owned by Clear Channel, I think in part, but that, you know, people are going to be moving more to, tons of people like are getting that satellite radio stuff too in their cars. There's a million other things that are just from all directions, just edging in on people listening to mainstream commercial radio format. And it's getting, you know, the commercial radio formats are just getting squeezed.
Holmes, sorry. We're going to go to phones in a minute. Go ahead and finish your point.
Sure. Just that in a lot of ways, like, the future for Clear Channel might not really be that great, just in terms of the kind of competition they've got from other sources.
Our first phone caller is Paco. Paco in L.A., are you with us?
Yeah, I am.
Question or comment?
I wanted to comment on something that was said in passing, not to be argumentative, but to be add something to the conversation. That this pales in comparison to the situation in Iraq. Actually, there's a lot. One of the first things that the U.S. did when it went in and rewrote the Constitution is that it instituted an immense amount of quote intellectual property rights in Iraq. One of the things I've been led to believe is they've actually made the saving of seeds illegal. This is top of Monsanto's and the GMO agenda, and you know, so the eco issues, seed saving, property rights. It's all about and water rights. This is all about what the invasion of Iraq is about. It's about the corporate global economy and the right to profit on absolutely everything. So I don't believe that major corporations can care as much about music as they appear to. It's really about their right to patent food and patent water.
Well, it all falls under the same sort of issues of control.
Yeah, intellectual property is a huge issue in terms of corporate globalization. It affects, like you already mentioned seeds, and there's also drugs. Is a huge, huge intellectual property issue that is going to have dramatic human effects, particularly in Africa with the AIDS crisis. But it also affects media. It affects, you know, who has the right to distribute and comment on and satirize media. It affects the general sort of progress of the internet as potentially as this amazing common space. Where, you know, everybody who, you know, and not everyone has access, and that's another issue which we have to address separately, but, like, where anybody who has access has access to the largest library of everything, you know, every textbook in every language on every subject, you know, every piece of art and culture. I mean, that's pretty amazing, and that's amazing for people who, for I think, the left, you know, for, like, the sort of communitarian ideas of the left, but, like, but this, you know, this intellectual property thing is going to be a huge, huge battle, because it really, you know, anytime you have a huge amount of the control that corporations wield does come down to information and intellectual property. And they're being extremely aggressive now, also in trade agreements. You know, right now it's the case where if a country wants to sell agricultural products to the U.S., they have to enact intellectual property laws in their country that are even harsher than the ones in the U.S. And it's just a condition. Like, if you want to trade with us, you have to do this. And so they're sort of hanging out, they're sort of dangling this fruit, and really exacting this huge price in terms of restrictive intellectual property laws.
I want to remind listeners that you're listening to Indie Media On Air. Paco, thank you for your phone call. We're going to move on so we get some other callers on the line here. Next caller, Brad in Venice Beach. Welcome to KPFK.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say I'm a street musician, and I'm actually en route to get my permit for the 3rd Street Promenade. And I liked what this young man has to say about talent and being able to play live to make a living. And someone that cannot survive under a system like that is obviously people like Ashley Simpson, who are out buying $1,000 handbags, which she's a product of this corporate reality you're talking about. So I would just like to say, as an artist that's playing on the street tonight, that I feel a tremendous amount of hope from some of these young kids that are doing this. I think Napster is the tip of the iceberg, and I think it's a war of ideas now. And I think it's a pacifist war, and I'm really proud of that, that these young kids are taking this technology, sampling not just like the rap industry has done now, but they're sampling images. They're sampling the Disney logo in their films and making mockumentaries about it, and they cannot stop this. And I'm just happy to be a part of it, and I'd like to thank you guys for choosing this topic and talking about it so profoundly.
Brad, thanks very much for your call.
I think Brad should watch out too, because Clear Channel is now trying to buy boardwalks and sidewalks.
Really?
People can't
really
play it. Oh, yeah. They want to buy the 3rd Street Promenade and the Venice Boardwalk and stuff.
Okay, our next caller is Ayana in Pasadena. Ayana, welcome to KPFK.
I just wanted to say also that there are big name radio personalities that agree with you and that will not broadcast over FM radio. They're moving to satellite. So the Clear Channel conglomerate that's trying to like take over the billboards and all of that really right now is kind of outnumbered themselves. The invention of the internet and the ability for people to be able to communicate effectively is about to just wash them out completely. It might take a little bit longer because they have more money, but you know, you can't have the internet and LimeWire and Napster and all these other places to get download free music and have artists like Ashley Simpson and her sister surviving, because if you know, it's like every couple of years a new blonde comes out. So that really, you know, that's not going to last too long. We just have to stay focused.
Are you affiliated with the industry?
I'm an artist. I own a retail facility, and I struggle with corporate America on a daily basis. It definitely has a hold on the average person. They're not allowed to think for themselves, but I am noticing a trend of people actively looking for something different and not wanting the regular thing, but it just takes time. It takes time and shows like this for that random person to listen to, so that, you know, maybe they might hear something that's interesting to them and they might want to learn more. It's just like a whole thing, you know. It won't happen immediately, but, you know, eventually it'll happen.
Great. Thank you very much for your call.
You're welcome.
Our next caller is Joe from the Valley. Joe, welcome to KPFK.
How's it going?
Good.
I'm an artist myself. I'm also a recording engineer. I have a studio, and I've been producing records out of my home studio. And last year I produced a record and woke up to the shock of, it's not just making the great music, it's a matter of promoting it and marketing it. And being an artist now, we seem to have to promote it and market it ourselves. And I found out the hard way that that's where the real money spending comes in. You have to, you know, for advertisements or making even flyers or anything simple like that, it costs a lot of money to promote your record as well.
There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
Holmes, actually, on downhillbattle.org, there's a lot of resources there to help people just like you.
Yeah, and, you know, I used to work at, the 24-track studios on 2-inch analog tape and everything like that, and I have slowly seen them disappear and go out of business because of home recordings like this. But the thing about loading free music on the internet, I mean, this is a new technology, and in a lot of ways it's kind of hurting the artist, because we're not getting paid for all the free music that's being heard. You know, at one time, you know, a record, you know, nobody could really make a record at their home. They still can't, you know, so you really couldn't copy the quality of a record. But now you can copy the quality of a CD just by burning it simply. So it's a real interesting phase we're going through right now.
Yeah.
And, what that one guy was talking about as far as setting up, you know, a system of paying people depending on how much downloads are being played.
Joe, I'm sorry to interrupt. We only have a minute left, and I just want to have a few last comments from our guest Holmes and from Lewis. And so we're going to have to wrap this up. Please visit downhillbattle.org. There's a lot of information that might address some of the questions that you're raising. And I want to thank everybody for calling in. Holmes, you have a quick last comment?
Sure. I'm really sorry we didn't get to spend more time on your question, the last caller. I think it is true that, you know, not every download is being paid for right now, but a lot more music is flowing and people are finding out about new stuff, which sort of, you know, that's kind of making it a lot easier for people to promote stuff.
Right.
And so, yeah. So check out downhillbattle.org and see what we have to say and email us.
All right, I want to thank you, Holmes, very much for joining us. And our engineer Maggie LePeak and Alan Minsky, our producer, and Lewis in studio. Lewis, last comments, and you got a song for us before we on our way out.
I do. This is a song. Last comments: don't support Clear Channel. Don't go to their venues. Support the band. Buy a T-shirt. Buy a CD from the band.
Who is this?
This is an old soul song. It is called "Quitting Time."
Right on. Thanks for listening. No satisfaction. It hurts to be left alone and misused. When my baby comes back home, I'm gonna give her the news that it's a quitting time. It's quitting time. You've been listening to Indie Media On Air, heard Mondays from 2 to 4 in the afternoon on community-based KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and at kpfk.org for the world. The Voices from the Frontline edition of the 4 o'clock report is coming up next. Stay tuned to hear more progressive independent radio.